This episode is brought to you by our friends who can protect your data and anonymize your activity at expressvpn.com/Charlie. expressvpn.com/Charlie. Protect yourself against big tech and big brother.
Hey, everybody. Live off the stage in Nashville, Tennessee, Candace Owens and I take the stage again for the first time in quite a while with a live audience, and we take questions. It is awesome. If you want to support us, go to charliekirk.com/support to help make this podcast and our work possible to reach young people all across the country, millions of them, charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Candace and I on stage. Enjoy. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
She is one of the most powerful voices for faith, family, and for freedom. Someone I know very well. We had a lot of fun together for a couple of years at Turning Point USA, and she's doing awesome, and she's a frequent guest of the show. We have an upcoming campus tour. It's Candace Owens, and I want to tell you, Candace has joined the powerful lineup at the Daily Wire, great company, launching a new show where talk show meets late night. She'll continue to call out leftist lies and the corruption of media and big tech. So join Candace each week as she welcomes powerful voices to talk about the most critical issues, break down what's actually happening in our country, and trust me, you're going to laugh a lot too. Candace is unfiltered and, quite honestly, uncancelable. Even as she says all the things other on the right wing are afraid to say, Candace is a dear friend. She's a fighter. She loves our country. And I know all of you love supporting Candace Owens. So here's how you do it. Her full show is available to Daily Wire members only. Use code CHARLIE and get 25% off your Daily Wire membership now. So if you say, hey, I want to support the fighters, well, you could support this program. You could support Candace Owens by going to dailywire.com. And you could, there's a membership tab. And then use the code CHARLIE. It's that easy. It's dailywire.com. Support Candace Owens. Candace is a fighter. She loves her country. I've seen her and her commitment personally and what she's done. And again, she's moved the dial so much. So go to dailywire.com, use the code CHARLIE, and get 25% off your Daily Wire membership now. Great to see all of you. It's terrific. I want to thank our amazing Turning Point USA activists here that have helped put on this incredible event. And isn't it nice to be in a state that, for the most part, is open and we're able to do events like this? I see so many friends here, and I want to thank all the amazing Turning Point USA high school leaders and college leaders that are doing the difficult and necessary work on your campuses every single day. You're the ones that have to come under the accusations. You're the ones that we call all these terrible names because you love your country. And tonight, we are going to celebrate America. Tonight, we're going to talk about things that your professors, they don't want you to be talking about, and they certainly are not going to tell you about our country, about what's happening in America. And I could tell you this, that, you know, at Turning Point USA, we've had some amazing experiences in the last 9 years, almost 9 years coming up in June. And probably one of the most amazing, if not the number one thing that I can say that we've had the opportunity is to be able to see our special guest tonight rise to the national scene. Someone who I've had an opportunity to speak at all across the country. I don't think you'll be able to find a duo that spoke at UCLA, UC Berkeley, and Stanford in one semester as conservatives and live to tell about it. We've had a lot of fun. We did a lot of different things. And she is now doing an unbelievable job with Blexit, the black exit from the left, and also her new terrific show with the Daily Wire, Candace, which I have to say is very, very, it's incredible here in Nashville. And I just think it's awesome to be able to celebrate our country and to speak freely with none other than Candace Owens. Everyone, let's give it up for Candace Owens.
Please welcome to the stage, Candace Owens.
This is so fun. I'm excited. I have not been doing any college campus stuff in, it feels like, years.
We kind of like lost a year.
Yeah.
And it's been at least a year and a half, 2 years.
And also, now I'm a Nashville resident, which feels amazing. I don't think I've ever been genuinely proud to say that I live somewhere, because I started in Connecticut, then moved to New York, and now then I went to D.C. And finally, I am in free America. Yeah, that's awesome.
And Candace, you're a mother. Congratulations.
Thank you. Which is hilarious, because everyone always said to me, you know, once you become a mother, it will soften you. And now that I'm a mom, I'm like, it's actually hardened me, because I'm thinking to myself, no, there's a lot of BS going on in the world and my kid's going to have to deal with it. So I feel like we have to fight even harder when you realize that kids are so vulnerable. And however we land in this society, you know, and in terms of the ideas in America, my child could potentially have an entirely different upbringing than I had. Not to mention, my child's half white, half black, so I'm not sure if he's half oppressed or half privileged, but we'll find out.
So, Candace, is your child going to have to pay reparations to himself? Is
yeah,
that how that
I think
works?
That's how it works. I think it cancels out, which is pretty exciting for our family.
So, talk a little bit about, I mean, you made a little bit of headlines. I guess that's the biggest understatement of the century. And look, it wasn't a fair fight, okay? You had someone who's not exactly smart, Cardi B. And actually, I have to tell you... You actually told me about Cardi B a couple years ago, and you said, here's this... That's basically all you said. She makes a noise and that she doesn't...
She makes really fun noises. I will give her that.
She talks in non-decipherable sentences.
Right, which is exactly why Joe Biden interviewed her while he was a candidate for the President of the United States. Incoherence understands incoherence, which I love. But yeah, you know, it was one of those things where people... always mistake me when people think I'm attacking Cardi B. No, there's actually a lot of, it's going to sound crazy to say, but there's a lot of admirable qualities about her story, meaning that she started from nothing. She worked her way, however she did work her way through life, became successful, right? So that there's something naturally conservative about finding success on your own terms, which is great. But then once you have that success, and you have an ability to actually turn around and try to make things better in the world. She just hasn't taken that opportunity. And it's increasingly now our culture just has become so toxic and so perverted. And I just could not fathom why Billboard chose to pick her as Woman of the Year. And this is a woman who has talked about the fact openly that she's drugged and she has robbed men. And that is what she did in the past. And she was selected for Woman of the Year. I can think of plenty of people that could deserve Women of the Year. You don't think it's going to be that person. And then what happened on the Grammy stage was genuinely just a form of degeneracy. And it didn't have to be Cardi B. It could have been anyone. And they do this stuff, you know, at a crazy performance, half naked. She looked like a dog humping its owner's leg, right? And they do this stuff, and then they look at us, like conservatives, and go, oh my gosh, like, why are you commenting on this? Because they want us to comment on it. Otherwise, why would you be half naked humping a woman center stage unless you were looking for attention and you wanted us to comment on that? And that really is the way that the left gaslights conservatives.
Yeah. And that term gaslighting comes from a play where it was an abusive husband who was trying to convince his wife or his girlfriend of a psychological manipulation tactic to actually turn down the temperature or turn down the light over time. Now, Candace, let me ask you, though, do you think that the left is moving too quickly, that their gaslighting strategy is actually going to backfire because they're not slowly implementing this? I mean, you look at, you know, for example, on the social media front, how quickly they kicked Donald Trump off of Twitter. People have now woke up to the threat of big tech, something you and I talked about a lot a couple years ago. Same with this issue with Cardi B. Do you think that in their plan to gaslight, it's actually going to backfire on them?
Yeah, I actually said that today on my show because somebody had asked me whether or not I'm optimistic about the future. And I think a lot of people right now don't feel optimistic because it just seems that things are getting crazier and crazier. To me, I think it's sort of the last squeals of a dying animal, like my husband says. They're being so crazy and over the top because they feel cornered and they're losing control. If the left was in control, actually in control, censorship wouldn't be necessary, right? Because you'd say, it doesn't matter. I beat them so roundly and so fairly and so squarely. Why would you censor President Donald Trump? You know, what would be the purpose in censoring him? You'd feel confident. You'd say, I hope he runs again in 2024 because I beat him so fairly and squarely the first time. So in my opinion, all of these things that you can get depressed about, because obviously this country is not in the best shape right now. We have a lot of real threats and invasion happening at the border. But I am optimistic that the media and the left are actually waking up people by the millions, not just in America, but all across the world right now.
And they're trying to implement this radical change so suddenly, and that normal people, decent people, are starting to push back against that. And you're the voice for so many of those people. You mentioned the southern border. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez went to the southern border and staged a whole crying thing. Yet there are three times as many children right now on the southern border than there were at any time during Trump's presidency. On the front page of the ACLU website, they bragged that they sued the Trump administration 264 times around these issues, and there's silence right now.
Right, and AOC just did a live on Instagram, I think, last night, saying that anybody even talking about the border issue is a form of white supremacy. So talk about really doing a 180 when first it's kids in cages, and now it's the exact same thing happening at the border with much more people, and they're okay with it. And, you know, I did Fox News a couple of weeks ago, and I said we should stop calling it a border crisis because it's a border plan. And I had spoken about this on stage with you for years. I kept saying, particularly to Black America, and I said it on stage when I was with T.I. and Killer Mike and Diddy, and we did this event. I said, looked at it all. The entire audience was Black. And I said, if the Democrats get power again, you are going to see more Hispanics coming over the border than you've ever seen, because their goal is to change the demographics of this country. They realize that first and foremost, the Black population is not increasing. It's stagnated. So Black Americans are, the birth rate has just been flat, largely due, of course, to the incentives of Planned Parenthood. And so they're really looking to import a new voting bloc and doing exactly what they did to Black America, at the end of the 1950s, which is just incentivizing them with handouts, right? Here's free stuff. Welfareism that kicked off under LBJ and the Great Society Act. And I can see them saying, wow, that worked with Black America. We got them married to government and thereby married to us, the Democrat Party. But now we need more of that. So we're going to import these people. They're already offering them free hotel rooms, $350 a night. I think the math works out too. Guess they're staying at the Ritz-Carlton. They're letting teachers, go down, which is incredible and so insulting to have in-school learning for these migrants when most people couldn't get to class. I mean, you guys would know this better than I, this year because of COVID-19. And so you sort of see all of this, and you have to understand that there is an underlying evil. This is a plan. They're not surprised by this. It's exactly what they wanted to happen, in my estimation.
And so, Candace, I completely agree. And it's a mistake to say that the left is shocked and surprised by this. This is deliberate. They want to reshape the country in a very different image. So it seems as if the left wants us to talk about race all the time. And that's why your voice right now is more important than ever, because you've called BS on the BLM Incorporated movement, if I could call it, which is AstroTurf, early. Right now we have the trial of George Floyd's the police officer who is being accused of the murder of George Floyd, Derek Chauvin. And you made a video that went very, very viral last summer. Why do they want to hyper-racialize everything in this country? And comment on the trial with what's happening in Minneapolis.
So in my opinion, Black Lives Matter is arguably the most racist organization that's ever existed. And I'm going to say boldly, in the history of the United States. And the reason for that is simple. So the idea that they used dead Black faces, you go to the website, picture of Breonna Taylor, picture of George Floyd, picture of Jacob Blake, picture of all these people, encouraging people to dig into their white guilt and to donate to Black Lives Matter Incorporated. Where does the money go? Right? So they elicit emotions all around the world by using dead Black people, the faces of dead Black people, and they make billions and billions of dollars, and that money does not go to help Black people at all. And when you ask questions, it's like falling down the rabbit hole. Wait, where did all the money go? Where did all the money go? What is the organization? Is this a 501c3? There are no answers. It just leads to more questions. So we know that in the first couple of days following George Floyd's murder, they raised billions of dollars. There's no such thing as Black Lives Lives Matter corporate headquarters. So there's no office, there's no overhead. We don't know who's on their payroll, who they're paying. We certainly know they didn't build up any black communities around America. We know actually the exact opposite happened because they worked so quickly to get celebrities to endorse Black Lives Matter, which inspires more people to donate to them. There are riots, there are lootings, there are protests. And what actually ends up happening is that more black people die in these riots, during these lootings and during these protests than the one person that has inspired all of this, right? So they tell you, you know, police officers, all built on a lie, right? That police officers are somehow disproportionately killing black American men. They aren't. White American men and Hispanic American men die at a higher rate by police officers. Exactly. Than black Americans. Those are just the facts, you know, and those facts really upset people. But it's just the truth. So there's no disparities in policing when you look at the actual data and the FBI statistics, and yet they're raising billions of dollars. And again, it's going to really the destruction. And they've had so much power. The idea, especially as a DC resident before I moved to Tennessee, that Black Lives Matter was getting buildings named after them and streets named after them after they terrorized Washington, D.C. for 6 weeks. We were terrorized. And this wasn't like storming a Capitol building. They were storming businesses. So these are private owners that have nothing to do with what happened with George Floyd. They were burning down cars. They burned down an entire church in Washington, D.C. You know, none of that stuff was ever really covered in the media, trying to pull down statues, not just in D.C. You guys know this. It was all across America. And so in my opinion, there's nothing more flagrantly racist than Black Lives Matter. And the people that you follow that support Black Lives Matter Incorporated never have the courage to answer those questions about where the money is going. And that's increasingly problematic.
One of the reasons this is what the left is focusing on is because so many people are afraid of being called a racist. And so to try and accommodate the left, decent people are willing to vote how they're told or put the bumper sticker on their car or post the black tile because it's almost like this cultural extortion. Do anything to me except call me a racist. And because of that, the left has realized that they can implement what previously would have been an economic class war as now almost a power struggle on the country. This is rooted in critical race theory, which you've talked about. Candace, can you really dive into this of what they're teaching our children, how they're actually instructing bigotry to the next generation? There's an amazing video from Loudoun Public Schools. I don't know if you saw it or not, but it was a white teacher on a Zoom call with a black student. You saw this?
I cover this on my episode of Candace Today.
Tell us what it is.
Yeah, you know, so there's so much talk about the education system, and it feels really good to be in front of people that are actually seeing this real time. And I guess, first and foremost, to let you know, everything that you're seeing didn't exist 10 years ago. And that's it's radically changed the education system, the American education system, and what they're focusing on, this hyper focusing on what's really just psychological conditioning, right? They're trying to brainwash students to psychologically condition them and not actually teach them hard academics that are going to be helpful in life. So I actually talked about that in my monologue earlier today, which was just, these are all facts, but America right now has never given out more degrees, and yet the students are dumber than they've ever been. So SAT scores, and that's not an opinion, that's a fact. SAT scores, standardized tests show that this is the dumbest generation. We're producing the dumbest students that have ever lived in America, and yet they've got more degrees, right? So if you actually look, so right now I've been doing a lot of studying over the last year, and I'm actually enrolled in a course right now that's on Zoom, and it's a literary theory course. Technically, it's English. It's an English course. And in this literary theory course, I was so shocked when a requirement was that we all have to list our pronouns. This didn't happen 10 years ago when I was in school. And in my class, I have three people who identify as they, them. You would think in an English class, they would tell you that you can't call one person a plural pronoun, right? You could be, hey, actually, that's not proper English. This should be offensive to anybody teaching English that they have to call one of their students they, them. But they don't care because they're not after actually teaching you that this is actually wrong and problematic because they want to make sure you feel good. So Thomas Sowell has a wonderful book. I know you guys hear me talk about him all the time because I think I've read every Thomas Sowell book. But he has a wonderful book called Inside the American Education System, and I recommend that every person reads it to understand how professors are actually, right now, they just want students to feel good and know nothing. So there was a child, and he gives you a ton of examples, but one that was particularly hilarious to me is there was a child, a reporter spent months in a Los Angeles high school, and they found the kid, 17 years old, who was the smartest kid in the class, and they asked him what he learned that year. In his history class, and he said that he learned that the Vietnam War was fought between North Korea and South Korea, kid you not, until Eisenhower signed a deal completely. I mean, just the idea that he even thought up that the Vietnam War was between North Korea and South Korea, tricky. But then the reporter asked him, well, would it bother you to know that what you learned, that you're wrong? And the kid answered back, and he said, no, because I learned in Mrs. Hill's class, I don't know if her name was actually Mrs. Hill, but I learned in Mrs. Hill's class that it doesn't really matter what you know, it really matters how you feel. And they made I had a really good semester, and she's our favorite teacher because she made us realize the importance of how we feel. And I think that is so emblematic to the times that we live. Like, you have an English teacher that's more concerned with how these children feel than saying, but actually this isn't proper English. And for some of the teachers I feel bad for, because they're also under siege, right? So the Georgetown professor who you're bringing up, who just got fired for accurately saying in a Zoom call that every time she looks at the students that are at the bottom of her class, they all happen to be Black. Well, we should be able to talk about that. We should be able to have an open discussion and say, why are Black students failing more than their white counterparts? And maybe it's because we're putting in place laws like they have in California, rules that you can't fail Black students because they're late, that punctuality is a form of white supremacy. We have a culture issue that's problematic. We know when we talk about Cardi B, Lil Nas X, and the Satan shoes, there are tons of reasons that we could talk about that perhaps Black Americans culturally, with the highest single motherhood rate in the nation, are not doing as well as their white peers. But instead, we call that professor who brought up a fact racist, we fire her, as they did, and the conversation gets swept under the rug.
One of the professors, they've said that, and it's been a controversy in Seoul. He had a great chapter on this in Discrimination and Disparities as well, where he talked about different forms of privilege. And how many people here are taught that there's white privilege in your school? Yeah, raise your hand. Okay, so almost every hand goes up. The fact that your hand isn't going up, go to that school, or probably home, you're probably homeschooled. We need more homeschooling kids in our country, by the way. We need to double our homeschooling population. And so what you're getting at, Candace, and I want to continue on this, it's so important and it's so thoughtful, is that a disparity can be blamed on a lot more than just discrimination.
Right.
For example, if anyone here is the oldest child, do you guys know that it is statistically proven that the oldest child is more likely to succeed in every sort of fashion than the younger children, middle child or youngest child? Anyone here an only child? Only children are way more likely to succeed than all of you. That's a disparity without a discrimination.
Right. And that is so true. There are so many disparities. And I guess, you know, to really speak to your point, I have two sisters and one brother, and we're all doing different things in our life. You know, we grew up in the same household, the same parents, grew up in the same environment with all of the same advantages in life. And yet there are still disparities. Some of us are more successful than the other. My sister's better at math than me. I'm better at English and reading than her. And so the idea that you can look at data and then just say, well, this just proves that there's white supremacy, or that there it's so intellectually dishonest. It's almost a form of intellectual cowardice. And also, just to comment on this concept of white privilege, again, this didn't exist when I was in school. We were never told, we talked about white privilege, and we were never singled out in that way. Like, it's weird to me because I had friends of every color. It would have been bizarre if suddenly I had a teacher trying to convince me, really what you're saying with white privilege is that this student is more privileged than you. You're telling me that I have to accept that I'm underprivileged. And that's a form of racism. The very definition of racism is assigning attributes to a group of people based on their skin color. Well, what's more racist than saying that white people are all privileged?
And so that's a great point. And Candace, I want you to help build this out more, because they view racism as a power struggle, not as one individual being racist against the other. I'm sure some people that go to some of these local schools here are taught that capitalism, private property, Western civilization, no matter what you do, you are then a defender of a white supremacist construct, which is why they call you a white supremacist.
Yeah, and so you really have to think critically about this. Like, what's the point of that? Like, why are they doing this? Like, why is your generation having to go through so many divisionary tactics? Like, this just didn't happen. They want to be so divisive. They want you to think sexuality, race, training you psychologically to see things this way. And this is just not the way the world has been. In my personal estimation, it's because there's a real concerted effort to render America weaker, right? So when I say that the truth is that there's never been this many dumb people that are convinced they know so much because they have so many degrees. And when you look at what the degrees are, like, you guys can get degrees now. I looked it up. Latinx study. First off, what the hell is Latinx? Period. Like, is it Latinx? I don't know. And by the way, whoever created that doesn't speak Spanish, because you'd have to redo the entire Spanish language. Everything is a woman or a man in Spanish. You know, la mesa. L or la is everything. Every object in Spanish is, so you're basically saying we just have to undo the entire Spanish language. Not just Spanish language, all Romance languages function that way. But that didn't exist, again, 10 years ago. You can get a major in gender studies. That should be pretty easy. There's only two. That should take a class, maybe 5 minutes in kindergarten. But I guess people are majoring in that. You got women's studies. There was a course called Social Justice and Civic Responsibility. I don't even know what that means or why you can get a major in that. But I do know that if you do get a major in that, you are not going to make any money in life, because it's not a real major. It's made up, okay? It's made up. And the kids don't know this. So to me, I feel bad when I come across, you know, college students, because there's propaganda. You're learning that this is real and this is reality. And then you're going to get out into the real world after saying, I took gender studies for 4 years, and you're going to realize there's not a job for that, right? There's not a way for you to make money. And what that creates then is a bitter, angry person, because you go, but I've got 6 degrees, and why is this idiot kid talking about, you know, the rest of America, who went to a trade school, didn't rack up any debt, and is making more money than me fixing air conditioners because he actually knows something? And those students turn into the ultimate activists. So when you wonder, who are these people that are burning the streets for 6 weeks? Who has the time for this? Well, unemployed people, you know, because they don't know what to do with feminist dance theory degree.
Everybody's mom always said, eat all of your vegetables. Even as adults, we still have excuses why we don't eat them. People say they don't taste nice, it's trouble to prepare. Your mom wanted you to eat your fruits and veggies because she knew that's how we stay and get healthy. While your mom never listened to your excuses, Balance of Nature has listened. All 10 daily servings of fruits and vegetables are in 6 small capsules. They're absolutely no trouble, always fresh, nothing artificial, and ready to take. And the cost, literally pennies per serving. Balance of Nature's fruit and vegetables, no hassle, no weird flavors, and mere pennies per serving. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. For a limited time, all new preferred customers will receive an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use the discount code CHARLIE. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use the discount code CHARLIE.
On top of all of it, Candace, they're also arrogant. So not only are they bitter, but they think they know everything.
That's the point. That's why you give them so many degrees. I mean, you probably saw that moment when I had to testify against white supremacy. And I had the two white women next to me, and they were just teaching me how they had degrees on white supremacy, and I needed to listen to them. And I had to literally remind them that I was black, right? There's no degree that you can I don't care how many classes you took. You know, she had a doctorate in white supremacy. I was like, what is that? What do you mean you have a doctorate in white supremacy, right? What are you doing with that degree? Well, she's lecturing a black woman on what she's going through in life. Candace, I have a doctorate. Let me tell you what you are going through as a black person. And they really believe that. They are so arrogant. The confidence that comes from degrees. And that is the reason for that, is that you insert these blue hair, purple haired people all throughout, you know, American corporations. And I'm apologizing in advance. The lighting's low. Anybody? But, you know, and that these are the woke corporations. These are the kids that are storming into the CEO's office and saying, you know, making demands about what they want. I mean, let me tell you, working for me, it's the quickest way to get fired. I built myself from the ground up so I could have a woke activist storm into my room and tell me how to run my company. These kids are arrogant and bratty.
And what happens on these college campuses doesn't stay there. It goes to corporate boardrooms, the halls of Congress, which is exactly what you're talking about. It's this pipeline from the university campuses straight to the halls of influence of our country. And the underlying philosophy behind a lot of this, which is something that we really have to pinpoint, it's rooted in ingratitude, that everything that came before me is terrible and awful and I must tear it down. And when you do not have an appreciation to at least pursue truth or think that there's something beautiful or wonderful in the world, well, then I would be pretty angry too. And you know what's so amazing is that the left, they're in control of almost everything. Do you notice how angry they are? We're happier than they are and we control nothing. We're the happiest people. We're the happiest losers we've ever seen. It's like these people are so angry. I turn on CNN. I've never seen such angry winners. You know, Don Lemon is the guy's screaming. And I say, you won. You're angry all the time. And this is why. It's because the only thing worse than losing is winning temporarily, knowing you're not going to win forever. It's the only thing worse than losing. So deep down, they know that decent people are going to rise up against this drivel and this nonsense. And deep down, that the only power grab that they think they can execute is through the woke industrial complex, through HR1, through the voting laws, through all of this. And they really are going all in, and I truly believe this, and I don't say it lightly, on trying to start a race war in our country.
Well, what they're always after, what the Democrats are always after, is power. And you'll always see this. Whenever they call something racist, you should just assume that it's something that's standing in their way. And it's a form of racism when they do that, because what they're saying, and I genuinely believe this, they think that Black people are stupid and emotional. And they try to make sure Black people are stupid and emotional by teaching them nothing in school but how to be emotional and know nothing else outside of, oh, everything, every time you go through anything, it's because you're a victim of white supremacy. So you're producing these Black kids who are failing at a higher rate than white students, and yet they're so sure that it's because of white supremacy. So these people then, every time they hear the word racist or white supremacist, the Democrats expect them, the left expects them to run out and attack whatever it is, right? So right now you're seeing this with Georgia, you know, rightfully passing a bill saying that we should have IDs to vote. I mean, this is so common sense. But for whatever reason, even though the Democrats were above board in the last election, they did not cheat at all, right? For whatever reason, they really don't want voter ID in the next election, right? So what do? They call voter ID racist. They say that, you know, a lot of minorities, Black people, don't have access to get a license. And this, to me, is talk about the bigotry of low expectations. Do you think Black people are so stupid that we don't know how to Google DMV near me? You know? I mean, I don't know a single Black person that doesn't have an ID, because you can't do anything in society. That would mean we're not driving cars. We've never booked a hotel. We've never rented a car. We never bought a car. We never opened a bank account, right? I mean, you need an ID for virtually everything in life. So it is so insulting to me when people look at me and just assume, oh, well, you know, that must be something you can't do. And I just say to you, like, that is the true implicit biases and racism that they hold in their hearts, is that Black people are just too dumb to figure out basic things.
I totally agree. And now they should be forced to answer, are Black people not supposed to get these ridiculous vaccine passports?
I know. So are those racist? Vaccine IDs, but are not racist somehow?
So all we have to do is pass a law that say that you need your vaccine ID to go vote. So then all of a sudden, what are they going to say? Like, if you either need the vaccine ID or you have the voter ID. Are they racist or are they not racist?
I know, exactly. I mean, they're never making any sense. So on the one hand, they're pushing that every single person should be mandated to have a vaccine and should have ID. And they don't want you to think that's racist. But on the other hand, voter ID would be completely racist. And we can see through this. They know what they're saying is foolish, but they're hoping that if they just keep calling it racist, it'll inspire enough blind hatred and anger that people will attack it and it will go away. And so I always I always place a challenge on Black Americans. Whenever you hear the word racist, I always say, stop and think of why that person is using that word racist, why they're calling it racist, because they're actually trying to get you to be emotional. And the best thing you can do in those moments is to pause and to think rationally and clearly and ask somebody to explain to you specifically, what is it about this that you believe is racist?
And so, Candace, can you talk about the biggest threats to the Black community or the biggest challenges facing the Black community? Well, we are told it's racism, 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 racism. Yeah.
There's a lot. So first and foremost, I would say, and this is not just the Black community, it's to America, it's the education system. And that's why, you know, I stopped doing college campus stops, and I've realized the importance of me starting that back up, because I mean, a lot of these students just don't know how radical the American institutions have become. And that is an implicit threat, because they're not asking us to learn, and we're not functioning under a meritocracy. Even affirmative action, that's a racist policy, you know. And it, by the way, it's not only a racist policy, it's hurting Black people. Nobody talks about this. Nobody knows this. So this is another different Thomas Sowell book, but he talks about a time that he was at Cornell. He was as an adjunct professor teaching at Cornell. And I think it was Thomas Sowell. It might have been Shelby Steele, but I believe it was Thomas Sowell, teaching as an adjunct professor. And he learned that all of the Black students were on academic probation. Cornell's a great school. A lot of smart kids go here. So he went to go investigate, and it turned out that all of those Black students were at Cornell because of affirmative action. So they weren't actually qualified to be at that school. Mind you, they were still brilliant kids. I mean, Cornell's a very difficult school. If they had gone to any other school they were actually qualified to be at based on their test scores, they would have been at the top of their class. But because they were forced into a school not on the basis of what they knew, they were at the bottom of their class and dropping and failing out. This has been proven across the board with affirmative action. It's why Clarence Thomas wrote a wonderful dissent and said that we need to stop this policy. It's harming Black people. But guess what? It feels good for the professors when they say, oh, we do affirmative action. So nobody actually cares to explore the data and the facts behind what's ultimately a racist policy. So coddling, that's one thing that's harming Black America. And I put that under the umbrella of white guilt, why people are like jumping around to like make, you know, roll out a red carpet. And, you know, if you really view Black people as your equal, view us as your equals. Let's compete the same. Let's do things the same. You know, let's both get into schools that we deserve to get into. That'd be great. Let's start with equality. And then, of course, there's the corrosion that is lingering from the welfare policies of the 1960s and the civil rights, the end of the civil rights era and the Great Society Act, which basically just inspired Black men and women to tear their families apart. You know, the government said, we'll give you more money if the father of your children is not home. So Black women stop getting married. And we know the statistics. You fare better in life if you are in a two-parent home. You know, that's just another fact that we're not addressing. And on top of that, and this really comes internally, you know, in terms of Black America, is we have an incredibly toxic culture. People say to me all the time, Candace, you don't understand Black culture. You don't follow Black music. And I say, you actually got fooled, because this is not what Black culture was. It's been completely poisoned. We're talking about music like WAP, and just a couple of decades ago, it was the Temptations. It was music about family, love, and faith. You know, our society and our culture is toxic, and it's become perverted. And we need to address those ills honestly and have discussion about them, rather than claiming this to be our culture. It's not our culture. Baby mama culture is not Black culture. That's Democrat culture, and that started in the 1960s.
And so, I want to get to some questions in a second, but I want to talk about the real life implications of this. The Air Force just came out and they said that there are too many white pilots.
Yeah, if I'm China and I see that tweet, I'm just like, America's really, I mean, it's just so embarrassing. It's just, it is, our obsession with race embarrasses me globally. You know, it just, I have to say, it's embarrassing. You know what I mean? Like, you got people in China, they're running a masculinity program in China. I don't know if you know that. You can read that in the BBC. They want their men to be more masculine. At the same time, in America, we can't figure out what bathroom to go into. Like, you know, and we're like, oh, we need men to be less masculine. And you need to realize, like, this game we're playing in America, people are paying attention all around the world, and we're corroding from the inside out. And it's because we no longer have a society that values strong men and decent women.
So let's focus on that. You were attacked by some celebrities, and you did a wonderful job responding. When you say that there are only two genders, and that women should get married and have children. Lots of children. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's these things, you know, they work. Tradition works. And that's one of the things that you realize the more you travel in America is that there's something that people in the middle, everywhere, you know, between LA and New York, that they're really getting right. And family is the number one thing that people are really getting right. And people tend to think that if you're a woman that believes that women should get married and have children, that somehow means that the patriarchy is tying you down. No, it doesn't. It's just that you will eventually realize, especially to young women, I talk about this all the time, that feminism is putting you on a path to make you miserable. To tell you that you should compete with men goes against your biology, you know? It goes against your biology, first and foremost. There are biological underpinnings to everything that we do, you know, and that it does happen. You're not going to believe it. You know, you're younger in your 20s, but you start to get in your mid-20s, and this the biological clock you hear, it really, you just start going, you know what? I want to have a family. You know, when you look back on your life, I promise you, nobody on their deathbed ever said, I wish I had just went into the office for one more hour, you know? It's all about family. It's all about the moments you probably wish you worked less. It's the stuff that really makes life worth living. And it's been the greatest and most beautiful chapter of my life, finding a husband and having my first child.
And I second and third that. And Eric and I are getting married May 8th, which
yes.
We're very excited about.
So. Beyonce.
And it seems as if that sort of tradition is under attack time and time again, because there's an agenda behind it. The agenda is that families, strong families, that is a hedge against government assistance. It's a hedge against being controlled by a centralized authority. A despot becomes a lot less powerful when families are strong. You see, totalitarians, they always try to destroy the bond between parents and their children. Always. It is the only commandment in the Ten Commandments where there's a promise in it. Honor your mother and father so that you may live long and prosperous in the land of which you are in. There's a reason for that. The family is the bedrock of every single civil society. Candace, I want to ask one last thing, and then we'll get to questions. Talk about your new show, which is very, very exciting. And then also talk about, you know, and I'm sure we'll get some questions on this, what people can do. It's the number one question we get on our podcast and on our radio show. What can I do? What can I do? I feel helpless. I feel helpless. What are your marching orders for what people can do?
Yeah, so I think I can kind of combine the answers to both of those questions. First and foremost, we fight back for culture. This is the war that we're in. We have to start winning the culture wars. And obviously for people, and maybe obviously not everybody in this room is conservative, but you do realize that we've been boxed out of culture. Everything on TV is done at our expense. You know, they're making fun of conservatives all the time. And we're largely pretending that we don't exist. Like we're some, you know, minute part of America when we're so much larger. And one of the things that you can do is to stop being the silent majority and just be the majority, right? Speak up. And I say this to people all the time, you know, what they're doing in so many ways is illegal, especially, you know, white people that are being openly discriminated against. I can't fathom the stuff that I see, the articles that I see written and the incentives that I see get being written against white people. And people don't understand that it's racism. I mean, there was an article on BuzzFeed that said white people just need to shut up. Right. And I always say to play the game, I just close my eyes and I imagine just replace the word white with black. Imagine an article right, that just said black people need to shut up. Every time you read something in your textbook, just switch it and ask your professors, you know, if this said black people need to, would you be comfortable with that? And if their answer is no, it's because it's just racist. It's no such thing as reverse racism. It's just open racism. Right. And for the people that I know that say it's difficult, you know, being in a corporate environment and saying, well, I want to keep my job. I promise you. There are corporations that are begging to hire conservatives because they're so tired of woke-topia USA. When one door closes, another one opens. And when you commit yourself to something that matters morally, the universe will conspire to assist you.
I totally agree. I want to talk about your show.
Oh, new show, The Daily Wire, called Candace. Very excited about that. Right now, you have to subscribe at thedailywire.com. And again, we're just taking back culture, you know, doing interviews, doing a panel, and having a lot of fun. So it's a big step, I think, in the right direction to just say, you know, we're conservative and we're going to have a show because everything that you guys are doing on TV sucks and it's not funny.
And that's a whole different interesting conversation. The reason why they're not funny, in order to be funny, you must be unafraid to pursue truth, because that which is funny actually confirms something that you see that is true. And the left is unable to pursue truth, so they've lost humor, so their late-night comedy shows are nothing more than audiences that applaud at them with their MSNBC one-liners while they're going after Donald Trump, and they have no humor.
And they're angry.
Very angry. And they're angry because they have no wisdom. You show me a happy man and a joyful man, I'll show you a wise person. And they have no wisdom because they have no God. With the fear of God is the beginning of all wisdom. Never forget that. Okay.
So true.
Let's get to some questions. That's always fun. And while people are, I don't know how we're doing logistics for this one. I think we have one line. Morgan will be in charge. And Candace, it's so much fun to be doing this again.
I know. On stage. I'm so excited.
Awesome. It's terrific. All right. We'll get to some right there. Raise your hand, please. And just line up if you guys have some questions. And we'll do that there. And it's an honor to be here, guys. It's terrific. Also, we want to get to as many as we can. And so make them questions, not...
Yeah, guys, try to make the questions quick because we do want to get to as many as we can. I always feel bad when the person that's been in line the whole time, they were like, sorry, you got to end questions.
Good. All right, here we go.
Okay, hello.
Hi.
My sister, she goes to a college that has started to lean definitely more left since the George Floyd event. And she was wondering what your advice would be for college students that have been kicked out of their sororities and fraternities for their political views and standing up for their beliefs, and the schools just acting like it's not even happening.
The one thing I always say, you guys know this, I'm like so litigious. Until these schools start feeling it in their pockets and people start lawyering up and creating a fund for this stuff and going after these universities that are funded by us, right? It's never going to end. So I always say, the bravest thing you can do is to stand up, speak out. And I'm not kidding. These universities have to start getting sued for discrimination.
And I'll add to that really quick. There is a cost to being courageous. We don't teach children courage anymore, mainly because we've removed all the courageous people of our history. The best way to teach somebody is to show them someone who did it before you. And so what is courage? It's a great question. Most young people can't answer it. Courage is doing the right thing when you don't know how it's going to work out. So the ultimate picture of courage in the 20th century is storming Normandy Beach. Doing the right thing, you have no idea if you're about to get a bullet in the head. That was courage. Trust me, whatever you're going through pales in comparison to the greatest generation that sacrifices there. I'm not minimizing the social pressure, the getting out of fraternities or sororities, but until our generation, our country, starts to weigh the right and the good over the cost, they're going to win. As soon as people start saying, I'm willing to bear the burden of doing the correct thing, that's when things will start to get better. So thank you so much for your question.
Hello, my name is Casey Bilski. I'm from West Virginia University. Our chapter, I run the meetings, and we have what cancel culture took from us this week. I fill it up a whole slide. And with that being said, a lot of our members are canceling things from the left, such as Coca-Cola, shopping at Target, things like that. When does that become too much? Because we're still, as conservatives, taking part in cancel culture if we're cutting out the left. I do it myself as well. I mean, I won't even wear Levi jeans, but when is it too much?
I would draw a difference between cancel culture and free market capitalism. Saying I'm not going to spend money here is not canceling Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola can still exist, so they're going to make, you know, consequences for their opinions. Canceling someone is what happened when Gina Carano got fired, right? Because she voiced her opinion about something and she was a conservative. That's saying you're no longer allowed to exist, right, as a human being because of your political beliefs. So that's, I don't view those things. Deciding where you're going to spend your money is your right in a free market society. And the corporations face consequences for the decisions that they make. I'll never buy a pair of Nike sneakers again. But I didn't say that Nike shouldn't be allowed to sell sneakers. So there's a difference there.
I completely agree with Candace. It's a good question. On the surface, it looks like the same thing, but it's two completely different things. Let me tell you why. No conservative picketed outside of Nike or Coca-Cola or went to their HR department or said, if you don't do this, I'm going to do that. Instead, we said, we're not going to buy stuff. Like, whoa, okay.
That's individualism.
Totally. Yeah. And it's using the pressures of choice and consumer markets to our advantage. What they do is way worse than that. They'll go to Coca-Cola, not just Coca-Cola. They'll go to their shareholders. They'll file lawsuits. They will humanize and personalize this in a way like never before.
Yeah, if we were calling for Nike, just to reiterate, if we were calling for Nike to be shut down, never to allow to be allowed to sell shoes again, that would be cancel culture. Me not buying a pair of Nikes is my right as an individual. I'm not forced to buy, spend money there, so I don't do it.
We're both wearing Adidas.
Yeah, and I would have been fine, by the way, if Gina Carano, if people said, I'm not going to go see her film. Fine. You don't have to go see her film. That's your decision, as you know, and you should be more power to you. But to make sure she loses her part, that's cancel culture.
And let me say one other thing, which is that we as conservatives and Americans, please purchase in alignment with your values. Please. Everything you buy, all of your expenditures must be a mirror of your value system. For example, limit your purchases of meaningless plastic and textiles from China. Buy stuff in America when you can. Take care of your fellow countrymen. Demand that your textiles are made here when possible. Something that my fiance does with her wonderful clothing line. Also, when it comes to these massive tech companies, if you don't have to have these subscriptions, cancel these subscriptions. I'm here to tell you, for all the new parents out there, there are other places for entertainment than Disney Plus for your children to be able to find content. So try to have your purchasing and the where you spend your money congruent with what your belief system is. Thank you.
Thank you.
By now, you've all heard me talk about how MyPillow is incredible. A lot of you are asking, how do I support Mike Lindell? Well, everything Mike Lindell makes is made in America. And a lot of you think that Mike Lindell is very courageous. And so if you want to get behind Mike Lindell and the work he is doing and say, you know what, Mike, I have your back, go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code Kirk. Whatever you check out on MyPillow.com, use the promo code Kirk. All MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. You can get a queen-size premium MyPillow for $29.98, regularly $70. That's $40 in savings. Go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. If you want to support Mike Lindell and get something made in America that's awesome, MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Support Charlie Kirk, Mike Lindell, MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk.
Hello, my name is Seth Bergdorn. I go to Bethany College. You actually wrote an article on us earlier this week. Oh. Yeah, and the school's canceled me on campus, and I was just wondering, I've been called a white supremacist by multiple teachers. How do I prove them wrong, and what do you have to say about that?
I didn't hear the background story, so I'm going to let Charlie answer this first. I didn't write the article.
Yeah, why don't you tell the audience the background of it, all the specifics.
So the school told me that I couldn't petition on campus or protest while their policies state that I can. And they just told me just not even to try to have a Turning Point USA chapter on campus. And they're just cowards and they don't want to hear anything. So freedom of speech isn't allowed on campus, really.
So I must be missing something. Where does the white supremacist thing come into all this?
Teachers, I've been told by multiple teachers that are conservative that teachers that are liberal have called me a white supremacist on campus.
So I'll start with this, and Candace said, you know, love your wisdom on it. Here's the problem, is that it's basically impossible to disprove an accusation, because in the sense of how are you supposed to prove how good of a person you are? As soon as it's guilty until proven innocent. And of course you're not that. But as soon as that's on you, you feel like you're on defense. And so instead, I believe the best way to possibly push back against it is not just say no, but throw it right back at them. Is say, no, you're the bigot for not wanting a Turning Point USA chapter at my college. You're the one that's afraid of other ideas. This will not stop until we return their force with some sort of a countermeasure. This idea that we can have this decent policy discussion, meanwhile they're calling you a KKK member, is insane to me. You're having a policy discussion. They're having a value discussion, right? We think they're wrong. They think you're a bad person. And until we start to actually push back against that, I don't think we're going to be able to get to a place where we're ever going to get anything meaningfully accomplished.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that that's not a form of discrimination to say that one group of people is allowed to have their political beliefs represented and the other group isn't. And I'll tell you this. You get a lawyer to fire off one letter and you'll probably have your organization tomorrow. They don't like pressure. They just never get it from conservatives. Plain and simple.
It's been 2 weeks since a lawyer sent something to them, and they have yet to respond.
Yeah, well, they're going to respond eventually because that would be a demand, right?
Yeah, it's a demand.
Demands have time expirations before you're allowed to take legal action. They'll respond.
Yeah.
100% they'll respond because they have to. It's a university, like I said. They accept federal money, so they are beholden. You can't just discriminate against students.
They're private, but they do have federal.
Oh, they're
money.
Private.
But they take federal student loans. Taxes, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Private. There can be loopholes though for private because if it's a private school, they can take federal student loans.
Yeah, and it's remind me the college again,
Bethany College.
Yeah, so unless it's Hillsdale, they're getting federally subsidized student loans, and so. Hillsdale's a great school. They're one of the only ones that don't take those federally subsidized student loans. And the other thing is this, is make more noise. Get more people involved. They don't like the attention. They don't.
They really don't. Universities hate attention. So, I'm sorry I don't know more specifics about your thing, about your particular case, but I think the fact that your lawyers already sent a demand means that you're doing the most that you can possibly do, and hopefully just asking this question will help amplify what happened.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Gavin. I'm 19 years old, and someday I want to be a politician. And I tell many of my friends that, and they tell me, why don't you go to college for something like that? And I don't really want to go to college because, it's not really a requirement, whether you want to be a congressman or a mayor or anything. And what is your advice to young people like me who want to hold a political future but don't want to go through college when it's not required?
Well, before you say you want to be a politician, my advice would first say your desire should be to do good. That should, and maybe it is, and maybe that's the way you classified it. Let me just say, if your desire is to do good and you think you can do that the best through being a politician, then that's great. I'm not saying this is you. We have way too many professional politicians in this country. A politician is almost a dirty word, almost. In a way that it's almost exhausting. So have your mission to want to do good for the world. And you're right. You don't need a college degree to do that. It's how hard you work. And most importantly, it's your character. It's who you are. So if you commit to yourself that you understand and you believe that your character is a reflection of your soul, and the soul in the sense of what you are is going to be the culmination of every single decision you make, then nothing can stop you, and a piece of paper is not necessary for that. So focus on becoming a better person every single day, becoming wiser and smarter and more intelligent. And guys, all of you have smartphones. You can study 6 hours a day. You could take online courses free of charge. College is fine if you want to go learn a very specific skill. I did not go to college, and things worked out. It's how you are. It's what you do with it. And the final thing I'll say is this, is that I am far less concerned about accreditation and more concerned about wisdom, which can be found in a couple different ways, definitely not in college, and in what are you willing to do for the desired task. I had a funny job interview once where I asked a young college graduate, I said, what's your skill? He said, well, I have a political science degree from this college. I said, no, what's your skill? What can you do that an 18-year-old can't do? And he said, I don't know. I do politics. I said, okay, well, I could tell you what. If I brought a plumber in here, he has a skill that I don't have, and I'm willing to pay him for it. And guess what? We need far more plumbers in our country and far less people going to Harvard learning to hate America. There's more wisdom in the plumbing community than the Harvard professor community.
Couldn't agree more.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, love the cowboy hat.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Johnny Cole Murdoch. I'm a veteran.
That's a great name.
And a student at Belmont University.
What?
Thank you.
Thank you for your service, by the way.
I appreciate that. Talking about culture is important. I call it a spiritual warfare, but that's like the secular term, the culture war. But a lot of people don't know the music industry, just like Hollywood, is owned by China. Warner recently got bought out 20% by a Chinese company. So every major record label is owned by foreign governments. Music is formative. And it's important to change the culture by music, because that kind of, like, if you're taking that into your heart and singing it out, you know, people take that in. So my question to Turning Point USA and the Daily Wire, would y'all ever consider having a record label to compete against the woke narrative? Because music is formative, and taking back America starts with taking back country music, because there is nothing more American, Christian, and conservative than country music.
Foremost, I feel like I have to tell you, I'm a country music junkie. I love country music. It's the absolute best. Secondly, I'm so happy to report that the Daily Wire is in fact opening its first record label. And I don't even know that I had the I had the permission to let that cat out of the bag, but whatever. Jeremy, Ben,
oops.
Whatever, oops.
How dare you?
So yes, 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 and it's happening.
I want to encourage you and add one thing to that. The longest book of the Bible is a book of songs. If you go back to the original Greek, worship means to come as close to the Creator as you can. To literally kiss the sky is what the word worship comes from. You all know this that are believers. When you have a song, it's experiential. There's something that can't be put into words. One of the greatest ways that we are able to prove that there is a Creator is when you have a room full of atheists and they say they listen to a piece of music that moves them. There's something beyond anything that they couldn't put into words. And let me just say one other point of this. Oxford University is trying to get rid of Bach, Beethoven, and Mozart. Let me just say this. Western music is the best music that's ever been created. Some music is better than other music, and we should be unafraid to say that, that the central canon that built the West should be preserved, protected, and understood. So I want to encourage anyone that's in the music industry here, because the amazing thing about music is how democratic, small d, democratic it is. It impacts everyone. It is the least elitist thing you could possibly imagine. From the person on the side of the street to the college professor, music touches everyone. It's understandable. It's accessible. It's widespread. It meshes into your spirit. The lyrics that a child is singing today are the values they will live out tomorrow. So I'm so glad you're doing the record label. It's amazing. And I want to encourage you. Wonderful. Yes.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate what you do. Remember Johnny Cole Murdoch for that record label?
It's a great name.
I love that. Such a good name. I want to buy your album already.
Please do.
Johnny Cole Murdoch.
God bless. Thank you.
It's a great name.
Hi, Candace and Charlie. It's super nice to finally meet you guys. You guys are my daily news source. I wanted to ask, I have experienced the undergrad bias my whole undergrad career, but now I want to be a lawyer, and I'm going to be a lawyer, and I want to go to a law school that gives me a degree that God is going to respect and a degree that people will respect. I don't want to go somewhere like Harvard. So I wanted to ask you all what you all thought about that, and I also wanted to say to Candace, I saw your video with Katie Hopkins, and I also have epilepsy, and I was going to ask if you all had any godly words of advice for me with somebody living with epilepsy, since it's such a forgotten disease that nobody sort of remembers anymore.
Okay, so I'll answer your first question about saying that you don't want to go to Harvard for law school. I mean, Harvard let David Hagen good. You know, I mean, like it's a free fall there. It's just about the woke competition in Harvard. You know, so this whole idea that Harvard is somehow the breadbasket of education is long gone. You know, they're basically, how woke can you get? Are you willing to work for, you know, how woke can you get and you get in? So good for you. Go somewhere sensible. Go in Texas. Find a place to go in Texas or Tennessee. You know, don't spend a bunch of money for what's really going to be the same degree at the end of the day. In regards to epilepsy, it was such an impactful episode because she's just brilliant and she's funny. And I hope that you were encouraged by that episode. And you're right. There, a lot of people don't talk about these conditions anymore because we're talking about a bunch of made up ones, right? And this is a real condition that impacts your entire life. But I mean, I know that from watching that episode and seeing, you know, Katie Hopkins, literally a piece of her skull missing and having her talk about that. I hope that it just teaches you, if anything, to persevere, that perseverance is a real thing. And also, that your mentality about what you have is everything, is absolutely everything. If you hold the mentality despite what you're going through, that you're positive, that things are going to be good, if you're uplifting every single day, I really do believe that you start to create that reality. And I think that's why she's flourishing and so happy today. So, God bless you from everybody in this room on that medical journey. And just sending you so much love from across the room. I really do. I'm so inspired by the fact that you have epilepsy and you've got such amazing goals, and you're going to be a kick-ass lawyer.
Thank you.
I'll just add something really quick. On the top of all the music from Bach and Beethoven and Mozart, they all wrote the same thing: to God be the glory. Have that be your North Star. And ask yourself the question, what is the law? The law points you to Christ, Galatians 3. And as long as that is your North Star and that is what you focus on, you'll be successful no matter where you go to school. But you don't need to go to a godless trap like Harvard to be successful. Go find a
David
place
Hogg. I mean, it's just
that respects your values and makes you a better person. And they try to have, they ask you the question, what does it mean to be good? A place that asks you the question, go there. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie.
My name is Parker Harless. I am a music business major at Tribeca Nazarene University. So I was going to ask you about taking the place of Cardi B. Have we fallen down so far into the rabbit hole of this awful music and this awful these awful lyrics that we won't be able to get back into the place of traditional values and lyrics in the music? Music industry.
No, because it's still there. So I always say to people, don't get caught up in the media simulation, right? So the Billboard's naming her Woman of the Year, and I hold the faith that people disagree with that, right? And I have to believe, and I know this, the majority of the people found the Grammy, you know, performance to be disgusting, whether they were fans of her or not. It was a step too far. So we have the media that's telling us one thing. This person's amazing. This is the way the world's going. The Satan shoes is also great. But the average American, don't ever get so caught up that you believe that the media is actually giving you a reflection of what our society wants. I think it's quite the opposite. Yes, of course, she's topping Billboards because somebody's buying her album. But I really hold in my heart that most people understand what, you know, Confucius, a Chinese philosopher, said a long time ago, which is that if you ever want to see the morals of a society, its music will furnish the answers. And so right now we have probably a bigger problem in Black America, because, you know, hip hop, you know, really does rule Black America. And it's so true that what you put in your ears, it informs your mindset. But I'm in Tennessee now, and I can tell you, that Cardi B doesn't have the same clout here. You know, she ain't Morgan Wallen.
And I got one more question as well to add to that. Since, you know, going into music business, when will y'all start taking applicants for the record label?
Good job. First off, Ben and Jeremy are going to kill me. So let's just start full stop. I don't think I should say that. I don't know. I know. Okay, I'm just going to spill my guts here. But I know that they're talking about picking up a lot of artists that have been canceled and a lot of artists that are afraid to speak out against their labels. So, you know, Daily Wire is making big moves into culture. When they're going to start signing new artists, I don't know. But I will say Michael Knowles knows how to play the guitar and he's damn good.
And Ben knows how to play the violin.
Yeah, we like randomly are very musically talented at the Daily Wire, so we might put together our own band.
I play the piano, so, you know, if y'all need a pianist. You know.
I love it. We should have just had a sign up here. Thank you so much for your question.
Thank you, Candace.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie.
Well, hi, I'm Sean Jones, and I'm from Belmont University. And I just want to ask you, my generation, for our entire lives, every conversation about equality has been one like a seesaw. We're taught that you must push one side down to bring the other side up. And that's something that we know is really, it's inherently discriminatory and it's inherently immoral. To think that way. So my question is, as a generation, how can we try to overcome that in this country? And how can we teach our children and the next generations better?
First.
Yeah, it's important to define what equality means. They're using this new word and they're letting it slip, which is their real goal, which is equity. There's a different. So equality under the law is moral and it is essential. It is the tenets of William Blackstone to John Locke to the brilliance of the founding fathers. It is the basis behind the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, and the Sixth Amendment, and yes, the First Amendment as well, which is that you have a right to be free. You have a right to be assumed innocent until the state can prove otherwise against you, which is the rule of law that we take for granted in our country. And equality under the law is essential and moral. And there's a second type of equality, equality of opportunity. It is admirable. We should strive towards this. This is why Candace and I are advocates of school choice. We're advocates of rebuilding the American family, of increasing literacy. We're never going to quite get to equality of opportunity, but we can get close and we can make attempts towards it. Then there's the third type of equality, which shouldn't even be called equality. It's really equity or equity of outcome, which is to take from one group to another and to blame discrimination for that disparity. That is evil and it must be opposed at all costs. If I gave $100 to every single person in this room and you came back, some people would go buy some stock on Robinhood. Other people would go out and have a nice time at the bar, and other people just lose the money. When you have liberty, outcomes will be different. It's a hard thing to say, but people will be rewarded for good choices and they'll be penalized for bad choices. That's the price of liberty. And so it's very important that we communicate the differences between equality under the law, equality of opportunity, and then equity, which is really forced redistributionism for a desired result, which is nothing more than a totalitarian power grab.
Right. And I'll just add to that, that one of the underlining more sinister motives that the left is really after, and the institutions are after and professors are after is this idea of collectivizing, right? And to tell you, teach you that there's no differences between you and the person next to you, because you guys should all end up the same and everyone should start the same, end up the same. And that couldn't be further from the truth, and remove race from the equation. Do you have the mean, or include race? Do you think that LeBron James and I had the same advantages in life on the basketball court? He's a monster. You know, I mean, he's a giant guy, right? And so he was born with certain advantages that other people are not born with, right? And so you have to realize that when the left is doing these sorts of things, what they're really after is trying to teach this idea of sameness. Like, we don't have different tastes, which is what Charlie is hinting at. Because if I gave everybody $100, everybody in this room would do something different with those $100. They don't want you to be an individual. And they're trying to teach us there's something harmful and wrong and backwards about individuality. And also at the same time, they're trying to shame you, to make people that are successful to feel shameful about that. It's even in our language, it's coded in our language to make us feel shameful about success. You know, selfishness, that's selfish. You hear that over and over and over again. You have to take care of yourself first, right? Your family second. You know, you bring up talking about how do we make things better in the future. Take care of yourself. And that's really a Socratic idea there, right? Socrates in the very beginning walked around and said to people, how are you doing? Take care of yourself. But what he really meant is that make sure you're doing work individually. Until you are a good person and you are on your own two feet, you should not be seeking to change the entire world. Make sure your home is in order before you try to step into somebody else's and make a difference. So really ignore those professors, focus on yourself, and you'll be able to do better in the long run to help others.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Emily Johnson, and I'm currently a pre-service teacher. I'm going to be teaching high school biology, and today in class...
Yikes. Not for you, but like biology is getting a little tricky out there, right?
Oh, you're telling me. But today we sat in class and learned the difference between equality and equity, and how we need to be equitable in our classrooms. And if we don't think there's a problem, we're a part of the problem. Mm. And I spoke up and wanted to caution people about being careful of lowering the bar for minority students, because we also talked about systemic racism within the education system and how we are just perpetuating that. And I wanted to ask your advice as I'm going through, because I'm very odd to be a conservative in being a teacher. So I want to know how to combat that and go forward with staying strong with what I believe, but also making sure that I'm not cowering down.
Yeah. You know, I think you challenge the ideas. You do so in a polite way. Be honest. Say, you know, I actually met, I wouldn't give him the name, but just say, you know, I actually met a black woman the other night, and she told me that she felt there was nothing more systematically racist, you know, than seeing black people as different and treating them differently, and while at the same time guaranteeing their failure. Because let me tell you, you get a bunch of handouts in life and everyone keeps patting you on the back and giving you self-esteem and saying you should deserve it because you're black, you're going to get hit real hard when you get into the real world and realize that, you know, there it's a whole different game, right? So not knowing anything and being given a degree for not knowing anything, and then arriving in the real world, all of these kids who were just told they don't have to be punctual, they don't have to show up, that they should just get A's simply on the basis that they're black, that all of this is a form of white supremacy, are suddenly going to become abject failures. So introduce that and just see what they come back with. Say to them, you know, I met somebody who has a different perspective. And when they say what they're going to say, which is, well, that's wrong, then say, wouldn't that be racist for us to assume that every black person is having the same experience in life and that we know how every black person feels? And they can't answer those questions and they get flustered, because what they're really doing is they're memorizing what has become a very popular doctrine that really is saying that all black people are the same and all black people need your help. And the idea that all black people need your charity is a form of discrimination and racism.
And I just want to encourage you. We need more teachers like you, and we need more teachers that are conservative, center-right, to go instruct our children. Education comes from the Latin word to lead forth. We need to take that seriously. So I want to thank you for your courage. Don't give in to these people, okay?
Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm a high school student from Brentwood High, and my question is about big tech. I know that our party is known for not wanting the government to control everything, and I wholeheartedly agree with this. But I feel like at this point, the government does need to start imposing some small regulations to protect our freedom of speech, especially when things happen like what AWS did to Parler. How do you think we should deal with big tech?
Well, I have so many opinions about Parler, which was one of the most egregious things they've ever done, to just cancel an entire app because they didn't want competition. And I mean, that really speaks to just what really needs to happen, which is that we need to break up big tech. And that's always been what it's about. They have become a monopoly. They know they're a monopoly, and they collude with one another like you wouldn't believe. There's no way that on the same day, and conservatives should have done a better job of talking about this and taking it more seriously when it happened to Alex Jones. I don't care what your opinions were about Alex Jones, right? The idea that Apple, Google, and Facebook and YouTube all kicked him out on the same day tells you that there is tech collusion. The idea that Facebook and Twitter on the same day took out Donald Trump tells you that there is tech collusion. They're speaking to each other. If there was a week lapse, if there was a couple of weeks, they're all talking to another right now. When they start colluding to keep other companies out of the free market, we have protections against that. And we need to see Google. We talked about this early on. I always said from day one, I've been saying this for 4 years, that Google needs to be broken up because it's become a dangerous monopoly.
And I'll add to that, and I want to compliment Candace. She had boldness on this topic before it was popular. Candace was one of the first people on Parler. She convinced me to sign up. And they were a legitimate competitor.
We were the first check marks on Parler, me and Charlie. How cool is that?
Yeah, when everyone thought it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And I want to also add, you know, AWS was doing a favor for Twitter. You see, Twitter spends a lot of money with Amazon Web Services every month. And so they're big customers. And so getting rid of a competitor like Parler helped the state-run Twitter. So your question is, you said, we as conservatives usually don't like interfering in private enterprise. You're right. Let me tell you why this is not actually private enterprise as we know it. If you go up to Indiana, many of you might be from the Chicagoland area because you're getting out of Illinois very quickly, like I did. If you drive from Gary, Indiana to Chicago on the Chicago Skyway, you guys might know it, it is a private-public partnership. It's a private highway. You know it's against federal law for the owners of that highway to have a big sign that says Trump supporters are not allowed to drive into Chicago on the Chicago Skyway? It's against the law. That's an interstate highway. We're dealing with information highways. This is how people communicate. That's how people transport themselves. There's no difference. You are not allowed to pull somebody over on I-10 and say, you know, I'm sorry, I don't like your tweet history. You're not allowed to use this platform. When 92% of all search results go through one company, when a social media app has 150 active users in the North American continent, and they can all collude together for one political unified purpose, that's not a free market. That's a cartel. Mm-hmm. And they are manipulating your children to hate themselves, hate each other, and hate the country. We know their political viewpoints. You can look at their political contributions. It's all the one purpose and one party. And so what do we do now? We have to build competitors. We have to own our own stuff. And quite honestly, every single state attorney general should sue these companies.
I know Parler is suing, and so that's the first step. Parler is suing. It's like Rockefeller and Standard Oil in the 1920s. It's time to break up big tech. And of course, I'm suing Facebook. Come on, it's me.
Can you talk, Candace? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I launched a website, a lawsuit against Facebook, and I was the first one to do it in the manner that I did it, going after the fact checkers. Right? It's a blatant discrimination. They demonetized my account on the basis of a fact check that made no sense. Where do these fact checkers come from? Lead Stories is one of the biggest fact checkers. Started looking into it. Where did Lead Stories come from? Oh, former editor of CNN of 26 years decided to randomly start being a fact checker in 2016 after Trump won, started an organization called Lead Stories, and somehow got a gig at Facebook, brand new company, LLC. And they got their first big contract was with Facebook. You know, so, I mean, talk about just like the collusion that's going on. It's big media, which is in bed with big tech. And so I just said, sue them. I'm going to sue them. And I'm not going to just sue them for a little. I'm going to sue them for millions, you know, and really not just on behalf of me, but because once it's been done once, like Charlie said earlier, it invites them and exposes them and they're open to every other lawsuit, which is why I'm proud to report that somehow Facebook has remonetized my account. Yeah, litigation is ongoing. So we had our first hearing. They tried to do a hearing to get the lawsuit dropped. And, you know, these things take time. We launched the lawsuit last September. So, you know, I'm looking forward to my day in court. But, you know, they're very scared about what's happening because I just want to open them up to be able to say, how'd you get this contract with Facebook? You know, to really expose, putting them through discovery and to really expose just how sick and perverse and you know, how much the collusion is taking place to really go after people and to make sure that we don't have the ability in a free market society to ever compete with them. So I'm really excited about suing Facebook, among other people.
Awesome. Thank you for your question.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
We think we have time for one more.
Hi, my name's Matt Zapka. I'm a recent graduate from North Central College. So,
Chicago.
First, I just want to say thanks for coming out, guys. This has really been really interesting to see. And let's see. Candace, earlier you mentioned, like, there's a bunch of companies that are desperate to hire conservatives. Do you happen to have a good way to find them, or do you happen to know of any?
That's a really great question. No, they're all too scared to speak out, right? And because they're fearful, but I'm telling you, just think in terms of being a business owner, right? You're at the top of your company. Let's take a company that actually leans very left, right? What's the company what is the publishing agency that was publishing Jordan Peterson's second book?
Not Harper.
Not Hachette.
It was not
Harper. Penguin. It was Penguin. Yeah.
Penguin
so
House.
They got
Penguin House.
Yeah. Random House. Yeah. I think they're under Penguin. Whatever. So they had, you know, they agreed to do Jordan Peterson's second book. Good idea. His first book sold 5 million copies, right? As a publisher, your job is to sell books. I mean, his books, literally, it's a chapter book. Stand up straight, you know, make your bed. And
lobsters.
The woke idiots at this company stood up and stormed the offices of the CEO. I don't care if that CEO leans left or right. What do you think that is for the CEO when you have employees that are threatening to sue, that are coming in? They cried. They had employees that cried because they announced they were going to do Jordan Peterson's second book. Well, all of these people, I've spoken to people at Warner Brothers, at the top of Warner Brothers, I don't know, like, you know, what you're studying per se. And they're all saying, we can't hire young people that want to work because they're all so sensitive and they're all so emotional. And so they're getting less and less, you know, they're getting nervous because they don't know how you can sustain a profitability model when you have these people that are so emotional and don't want to work and think that they deserve everything and want to be unionized. So that's why I say when one door closes, another opens, because they're looking for solid conservatives to come in the door. Like, I'm telling you, they probably breathe a sigh of relief when your hair isn't blue, just when you come in for an interview. And so they're starting to realize corporations that you think are so woke because they do these things, they're doing that because they're really under siege at their own companies and they're looking for things, the pendulum to swing the other way. I wish they had more courage and they spoke out. But they're there. And trust me, there's going to be, in my opinion, this generation, I've never seen a more hyper-privileged generation of people that are coming out of college campuses today. So it's a better market to go into as a conservative than it is as a leftist.
And they're there, especially in the mid-size owned businesses, that where the owner or the founder does a lot of the hiring and employing. The Fortune 100 is too. The HR departments, they're like, we don't want to deal with the wokesters anymore.
Yeah.
Like, where are the decent people who love their country? So that pendulum is swinging back because they're going to HR departments extorting these huge budgets.
Weird.
Like, we demand $100 million to BLM Incorporated. Like, who are you? You're 24. You went to Brown. Yeah. Like, you know nothing.
Yeah.
Like you're not oppressed. Like, you're like the luckiest black person in the history of the world. Like, stop, you know, complaining all the time. And so that's part of the issue that's there. But I guess the spirit of your question is that you're worried possibly about the employment or the factors of that. This is going to swing back. And finally, we need a new generation of entrepreneurs, everybody. Start your own stuff. Please go start your own stuff. It's so important. And, thank you for your question. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So I want to thank all of you guys for your commitment to our country and for the cause. For those of you that are on campuses, don't give in. don't give an inch. Candace, any closing words?
No, just it feels so great to be back. And I want you guys to make sure you feel super inspired, you know, and know that you're not alone. I know a lot of times you get conservatives that say they feel like they're the only one. You're not. I can't tell you how many people write to me every single day that feel like they can't speak out and that they're the only conservative. And if one of you starts speaking out, I think a lot will follow. So think of yourselves as pioneers. You're facing tremendous odds. It might feel like you're facing tremendous odds, but you're not. And people always need that first act of courage to know that they can follow and that they're not alone. So thank you guys so much, because I couldn't do what I did without you guys.
And let me say this, that there is no replacement for work ethic. And I could tell you from firsthand experience, no one worked harder from the time that we traveled the country than you, Candace.
Maybe you by one hour.
You took the red eye flights. She said yes. No, she said yes to the speaking events where she had to do 2,000 pictures and, you know, was not paid and then had to go across the country. She went to the college campuses. She did all the interviews. I saw it. And, you know, there's always this perspective of like, oh, she came quick onto the scene. I'm like, huh. I remember that it wasn't just like an anointing from someone in Hollywood that's like, oh, Candace. You're like, no, Candace, she hustled, man. And she deserves all of it. And that's a lesson for all of you guys, that I saw it firsthand, that the influence she has and the, you know, we're so proud of you, Candace, in so many different ways. Blexit and, you know, the book success and
thank you guys
and all
so
of,
much.
No, I mean, it's thank very, you. It's a lesson for all of you, because there is no replacement for outworking the person next to you. And that's something I wanted to make sure I mentioned. And so everybody, our best days are ahead. No longer the silent majority. Be optimistic. Be happy warriors.
And outwork your opponents, which should be pretty simple because they're leftists.
God bless you guys, and God bless Tennessee. Thank you guys. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. Please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. God bless you. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.